How's everyone doing?
Great!
Come on, it's day one. You guys can get like a little bit. There we go. I want to actually start off this panel with a very quick story, it's about the bathroom line, but it actually ties in really well. One of the things that we constantly in comics talk about is wanting to see more female readership, and Brian, in a lot of his books, has been really great about developing really strong female characters. I just have to say that for the first time in my life, I am at a comic book convention and I'm making my way, dashing to the bathroom after the last panel that I just moderated, and I see this giant line for the women's bathroom and no line for the men's, which was just very exciting and really encouraging to me. I felt like I had to share that. I see some ladies in the audience here, so hopefully that is a good reflection that we in comics are getting better about writing kinds of books that really can be accessible to everyone, because we want as many people reading them as possible. And one person who is fantastic about doing exactly that is the gentleman to my left, and the reason that we're all here, Mr. Brian Wood. My name is Jeremy Atkins. I'm the Director of Public Relations at Dark Horse. One thing that in the last year we have brought Brian on board to not only now write two different books for us, but also his creator-owned work, The Massive, which in my opinion, sorry if you disagree with this, Brian, is the best work that I think he's ever done. Have you guys been reading The Massive? It's really fantastic. And on top of that, it is freaking gorgeous. So, without further ado, we're going to talk a little bit about Conan. So, Brian, if you want to maybe give us a little...
I have not seen these pages yet. Okay, I've actually seen that. I just want to say about The Massive, what he just said. I don't know if it's the best thing I've written, but it's like the one that I sweat the most. I think writing those scripts takes me like twice as long as almost everything else I do. I think part of it is the research, but also when it's like your own thing, you really, you do sweat it really, really hard. I don't know if that makes it better, but thank you.
Conan, so Brian, we're actually, it's a little under a year now since you've come onto the book. How many of you guys have been reading Brian's run on Conan? Awesome. Maybe if you want to talk a little bit about kind of what this series has been dealing with the characters so far, for those who haven't read it, and then also kind of what we can expect to see in some upcoming issues.
All right, well, it's kind of interesting now, because I'm now... Well, I think you've just read issue 8, I think, came out, or 9. I'm like up to 14, 15, 16. So I'm sort of, like, this entire 25 issue run is really a single story with like a sort of a narrative arc. And I'm sort of like at the peak of it before it all kind of starts to go down towards its end. So I can sort of see, I can sort of like see it taking shape. And it really is about, it's the famous love story of Conan and Belit. And I've been sort of crafting these short stories that sort of feature, these sort of episodes they have where this relationship of theirs at the beginning is like challenged and then challenged again and then again. And they sort of like work through all this sort of like culture clash and self-doubt and like, there's like, threats of betrayal coming up and some other like, horrible things. So I feel like it's very satisfying to have to be building what I feel is like a very relatable relationship over time. It's kind of hard to talk about because I'm so much further ahead in the writing than the comics are, so I'm trying not to like give anything away here. But that was really what attracted me to this book in the first place, is I felt like Conan in like a love story or like a relationship is not really what anybody thinks of when they think about So I felt like it was like kind of a cool chance to do something different.
Couple of awesome ones. Pretty amazing covers here.
Yeah, this is that. I've never seen. I don't even know what issue is that.
Like issue nine.
Okay. Yeah, this is the start of the arc after the next arc, where I really get my Northlanders on. And this one, as you can see,
some pretty amazing interior pages here. We've had a few different artists on this book. Currently, it's Basilis's run, I believe.
Yeah, he just wrapped it up. He just wrapped up his three issues, or his two. After that is Declan Shalvey, which is an Irish guy who I worked with on the final Northlanders arc, and he's also done a lot of Marvel stuff. So he's doing the next three. But I think this is this guy that I don't really even know, named Mirko Kolak. It was one of your guys, I don't know. The art is amazing. It's like super rendered. It's really like... I haven't like doing all the. It's a story of like a siege on a fort, and so it's like a lot of like catapults and walls and hails of arrows and everything. It's pretty cool.
So, I mentioned the Massive earlier, one of the things that's happened recently is that we brought Gary Brown onto the book, who. In my opinion, has really been bringing it in the art category. I mean, everything he's been doing on the book has been amazing. One thing I do want to point out that I always like to do at these panels before we get to Brian talking a little bit about the Massive is there are sometimes some unsung heroes in the comics industry who are actually as much a creative partner on a lot of these books as the people who are actually writing them or drawing them. And Brian's editor, Sierra Hahn, is actually here in the back of the room. And aside from just making her furious with me that I'm calling her out, Sierra, will you stand up a second? Sierra's been doing some really good work on this book with Brian. And the reason, I promise you there is a reason, Sierra, other than just to say that you're doing a kick-ass job, which I think everyone, including Brian, would agree on, is on your way out, I want to make sure that I get this out now, we have created these incredible limited prints of the three Raphael Grampa variant covers that we did on The Massive, and Sierra is going to be handing them out as you guys leave the room. So you can see she's holding them. That's also the beauty of comics, by the way, is like, one day you're like on the phone with a rock star talking about a story. The next day you're like handing out stuff in the back of a room. So, yay, comics. All right, so Brian, if you want to talk a little bit about The Massive. How many of you guys have been reading The Massive?
Well, I feel like... I feel like once I got past that first arc and I started working with Gary, you should all be seeing now what this book really is. And it's having like so much fun writing this and like killing myself writing this book, doing all this research. And I really, what it is to me is, I mean, there's this like. I always hesitate to use the word post-apocalyptic because that's kind of overdone. But there's this like world that we've built, and now I just want to put all my characters through hell in this world, which is like that's what it's all about for me in all my books. Like give them like a really really hard time and try to figure out how to get them out of it. You know. So this issue, which is issue 4, which is my favorite one. And the two after that are these one-shots that are connected by this storyline of this crew sort of like finding basic supplies of like food and water and fuel for this ongoing sort of survival mission and also the search for their missing friends. And this one is set in Somalia. The next one's in at the South Pole. This is like so much fun. This is exactly what the kind of book I wanted to write. And the third one's set on one of those giant container ships, like those ones that are like three quarters of a mile long. And working with Gary, who's kind of a rookie. I mean, he's done stuff for Dark Horse. It's a Mass Effect or one of the other books.
He did actually a miniseries for us called Dark Matter.
Okay. He's a Kubrick School grad, and I've had a lot of luck over the years in like kind of like finding an artist who's like fairly young, fairly new at it, and really riding their coattails really, really well as they become very, very famous. Like Becky is a great example of that. So I mean, Gary's like, I'm giving him a lot of really, really tough stuff to draw, like a ship full of shipping containers, and he's doing really, really well. These covers are by J.P. Leon,
and this is actually the series that comes in January.
This is the third arc. Where the crew kind of comes across sort of like a floating nation. Like these guys have sort of taken those like kind of mobile drilling platforms and kind of put a bunch of them together. And in the wake of the crash, in the wake of this like kind of like destroyed world, are kind of forging what they call like the next step of like human civilization in the social sense, you know, kind of like a utopia. Of course, it's not all that it seems. That's all I'll say about that. You can see that cover is rife with conflict.
So, you guys may have seen in San Diego, we announced Brian's going to be writing another series for us. It's this little franchise you maybe have heard of at some point in your life. It's called Star Wars. Anybody? Well, at least you guys are all reading The Massive. That's awesome. So we're obviously very excited to be bringing Brian on for this book. We're actually calling it Star Wars because we believe it's that good that it doesn't even need a subtitle. So Brian, do you want to talk a little bit about what the storyline is going to involve, you know, kind of, we're going to be taking these characters, and again, it is all the characters you know and love, not someone you have to like pour through a timeline for like an hour and a half to figure out which novel they appeared in, if they were in a game or not, or if they were. So this is Star Wars.
I got in a lot of trouble. I went to a Star Wars convention last month, which is great. I have to say it was actually quite fun, but I had given an interview before that, where I was possibly unclear and gave the impression that that I was ignoring the existing continuity of Star Wars, which I'm not, and I had to like explain that many times during that weekend. This story takes place right after the first film, and by first I mean the real first film that came out when I was five, not what they're calling number one now. It takes place immediately after that, immediately after the Death Star blows up, like a couple of days after that. And that's where this series lives. It lives after that and before Empire. And I felt like there's a lot of space in between those films. A lot of things happen that aren't really explained in the film, so I'm just kind of like mining that world, that territory for a story. So it's all like, it's everybody. There's Wedge back there, Leia and Luke. It's the core cast. It's the cast you saw in that first film, and what my comment about the continuity was that I said that this series is as if none of the other films ever happened. And what I mean by that, what I really mean by that, is that in the characters' minds, those films haven't happened yet. So Luke and Leia don't know they're related. They don't know Darth Vader hasn't even met met Luke. He doesn't even know who Luke is. So all that stuff hasn't happened, which makes for a kind of an awkward writing of these things, because I'm like, well, you know, Luke and Leia were like flirting, you know, but they're brother and sister, so how do I, like, what line, how do I walk this line, you know? So, anyways, that's what I mean. It's definitely in continuity, but the characters don't know it yet. And that art is, that's Carlos Danda, who's he's like one of Jim Lee's guys at Wildstorm in DC for like a long time, and he just does these super, super detailed tech. And there's a lot of like X-wing action in this book. There's a lot of ships, and so I really felt like this guy was a good choice for it.
So I'm going to ask Brian some general questions. We're going to kind of talk about some of his writing overall. Mainly Dark Horse focused, because it's a Dark Horse panel, but that means that you guys can ask all the Marvel questions you want afterward.
I assume everybody's at the Marvel panel that I bailed at, so I could go to this panel.
Yes.
Oh, no, I shouldn't have said that. You're all going to like head for the door.
A cue Joe Quesada coming in and taking Brian behind this curtain here to talk. Brian, you know, obviously one of the things that you've kind of dealt with in a lot of your writing, and again, sort of in The Massive, is, kind of, there's a bit of a kind of political undertone to a lot of it. So, maybe what, if you want to talk a little bit about, kind of why that is, sort of what drives that in you, and, obviously with some of your previous series, that's been the case as well. So, why is it that always seems to be a part of your writing?
It's a little hard to say. I mean, that was the first book I ever did, was a very, very heavily political book. And I feel like part of... I sort of got, like, pigeonholed into that. And so I think instead of either just, like, going with it and being like, okay, I guess I'm that guy, or, like making a huge point to, like, do the opposite of it rejecting it. I started to try out to figure out how I could sort of use the fact that I've developed a rep for this kind of story in ways that like interest me like over time, like as I age and everything like that, and finding new ways to use it. I always feel like DMZ was sort of the first step, where I sort of like actively tried to write a political book that was full of stuff that I didn't necessarily believe in myself. I really tried to make that, like I use the term, as a bipartisan book in terms of the politics in the book and like the general outlook on that war. To mixed results, I guess. But and then in Northlanders. There's also a lot of that in there, although it's a little bit hidden, sort of like under the medieval world and the conflicts of that time. I still felt like I could use some of that and make it work. And the Massive is kind of I feel like I'm kind of moving beyond what like DMZ was. Like the book has a real strong pacifist message, or at least one of the characters has a really strong pacifist message. And at this point, I'm trying to sort of get beyond the actual politics of the event, and just kind of into like a more people-based look, like how all of that which happened and is done. Is now affecting the way like everybody lives on this planet. So possibly this is like my book out of that.
So that brings up a question that I was going to ask anyway, is that when you're starting, especially with something like The Massive or DMZ for that matter, when you're creating a world, for you, are you coming up with the world itself first, or do you find yourself actually sort of coming up with the character's sort of plight in that world and then building the world around the character?
It's a little different each time. I mean, I think with the Massive, I think its initial idea came from, I was like really obsessed with like a Whale Wars TV show, like years ago. I mean, this book, I mean, I had this idea a while back, and was like pretty into that for like a year, and I was like, wow, I wish I could write a story about this. And I'm like, well, like how could I? Like, what would I have to change? How would I make it mine? How do I make it just not like the show? And then that's where the world came from. So I think in that case, it was like a bit of the characters first, a bit of like the story first, and the world came in after that. Other things like D&Z was like all world first. And doing this book at Image called Amara, which is also kind of a similar sort of futuristic world. And that was very much world first, I think, or like sort of like hook first and then character after that. So there's not any real one way to do it. Northlanders was like all world first.
And then, you know, on that note, obviously all of your books have, you know, from the very beginning have had some very strong characters. And in many cases, as I mentioned before, a lot of strong female characters. In terms of, you know, writing books, you know, in established worlds that aren't your own, how do you find that to be in terms of, you know, for instance, do you expect, are you going to do kind of a lot of development of Leia's character in Star Wars? Obviously, Belit is a very big part of the Conan right. series you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Belit is really the star of that book. At least that's how I'm doing it. Leia is really also the big star of the Star Wars book. Like really early, like right in my first pitch, because I was asked to like pitch that book, and so I sent the editor Randy. A bunch of like loose ideas, and right at the end, I said, "Oh yeah, and I want to make Leia an X-wing pilot." Like I didn't really know what the reaction to that would be, but I kind of wrote it on a whim, and then I began to think about it. I'm like, "Yeah, well, they better say yes, because now I really really want to." And of course, they did. I think one of the notes I got back was either from Randy at Dark Horse or one of the Lucas editors who I also work with. Was that they thought that was good, because often she is just shown as sort of like a diplomat. Like she's in a lot of meetings and she's not really doing all the action stuff, which she actually did in the film. So that was good. So once that happened, I sort of kind of made her the core of this like initial story. And I really find her to be, I mean, one of the things I said that isn't really talked about in the films is sort of like the, you know, the Death Star blows up, they have like a happy scene at the end, and like kind of everything's fine, but you don't actually ever see fallout from like Luke's entire family being killed, Leia's entire family being killed, her whole planet blowing up, all those pilots dying, like all of like Wedge's friends, pilot friends. There's none of them. No one ever talks about that. And so I sort of thought about her being super young, being like 18 years old, having all this happen to her. Oh, she was like tortured too. And now she has all this a burden on her, like the burden, like the weight of being a figurehead for the Alliance. So I sort of, I mean, I really wanted to have that at the core. So, I mean, all the other characters, too, are kind of dealing with that as they kind of put the pieces back together. But she's really kind of up front there, up front in the story.
Well, and obviously, you know, everyone in this room probably has had some level of a personal relationship to the Star Wars films. You know, out of curiosity, you know, now writing some of the characters you're writing for Marvel, and again, with what you're doing with Star Wars, like, when you got into writing comics, did you ever see your career going this direction? That, I mean, Star Wars is, you know, still one of the most relevant, you know, franchises in the world, and it was created, you know, over, 35 years ago. So, how is that for you? Do you look back on, you know, the kid who was doing kind of more indie books and think to yourself, wow, how did I get here? Or,
yeah, fuck, man, how'd that happen? Yeah, no. Where did my life go wrong, is what you're saying? No, it's...
I think it's very exciting.
It is exciting. It's interesting because never in a million years would I ever think to have pitched a Conan book or a Star Wars book. Like, it would never have occurred to me that these things were things like anybody wanted me to do, I should do, or like I could write, you know. So there were things that the Dark Horse brought to me, and it's really good. I'm having a lot of fun. I mean, Star Wars is interesting because over the years, I mean, I was definitely like any person in my age range, like my youth had a very heavy Star Wars influence. And over the years, I've kind of like, you know, been like into it, and I didn't care and stuff like that. I read a couple of novels over the years, and so when it was like offered to me, I was like, first my first thought was like, well, this would be a really good business move, because I mean to be honest, that's like always in the front of my head. I have to like pay the bills and everything. But I was like, if I do this, then I'll be writing a Star Wars book, a Conan book, and an X-Men book. And I had just written this like Lord of the Rings comic. And I'm like, that's pretty good. I mean, that's pretty odd. Like, I like that, seeing that on my resume, you know. And so like I pitched it, and it's all going well. And it's I mean, it's almost kind of a real shock to me how smooth it's all been and how well it's going, and to me, because I'm like, well, I I've been this indie guy all these years, and I actually can write this stuff too. So it's been I mean, it was like a personal revelation, I think, as well as a lot of my like longtime readers who also never thought I would be working on these books, you know. So it's a surprise.
You know, and actually, you know, back to Star Wars for a second. You know, obviously, one of the things that can be a challenge, I guess, in writing the Star Wars books is the fact that there's always someone who thinks they know more about the continuity than you do, whether they do or don't. But also the fact that, you know, working with Lucas, they really take good care of this property. One of the reasons that it's remained so relevant for so long is that they've made every effort to make sure that anything that comes out in relation to Star Wars actually really adds to the lore and really, you know, helps to expand the fan base and keep the franchise alive. But also, in a lot of cases, you do have to sort of write for, you know, an audience that could be anywhere from younger readers up to, you know, guys our age, old dudes, in other words. So, do you find that challenging? I mean, again, you know, you are someone who really has written some pretty extreme stories in the past. I mean, do you find that you ever have to limit yourself in writing Star Wars? Do you find ways to still really kind of make the story kind of as heightened as you'd like?
Well, I feel like there's an instinct I had when I began writing it. Where, I mean, I agree with what everything he said about sort of the, you know, the Star Wars franchise over the years. I'm really glad I went to that con I went to, because I was at the table signing Star Wars prints, and I would see a range of people coming by, like literally from like age 2 to people in their 70s who are like hardcore cosplaying fans. So they're obviously original fans, you know. And I could really appreciate that, you know, that Star Wars has stayed pure enough to kind of like hold an audience as they age. From like I was 5 when I saw it first, and now I'm like still just as like enthralled by it. And if you compare it to like a superhero universe where everybody's died a couple times over, like there's like a lot of blood and gore and sex, I mean that kind of stuff doesn't hold the audience over the years, you know. So I can recognize everything he said in Star Wars, and so I feel like I sort of have this natural sort of instinct to kind of write with that in mind, you know, just kind of keep it not to sound like a prude, but to kind of keep it pure in that way, you know. And in the spirit, it's been all these years, and not try to, like, you know, change it and make it gritty or make it, like, better the way that I think it should go.
Which is why you're torturing all the characters in the Massive.
Yeah, well, I gotta make it up somewhere.
Right.
and the Star Wars fans, yeah, they're all really nice. I mean, like, I write the X-Men, so I've seen, like, those infamous hardcore X-Men fans, and the hardcore Conan guys can be a little tough on me too. But Star Wars people are just, like, super laid back, and nice. So it's good.
It is pretty amazing. Have any of you guys ever been to a Star Wars celebration? Anyone in the room? It actually really
changed everything. Like, it put everything into perspective. Like, as far as these shows, that was, like, hands down the best show I've ever been to.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, it is just this giant love fest where everybody is just smiling the entire time. Well, that's not true. I did have a clone trooper who was about 13 yell at me once when he was convinced that I was pronouncing a name incorrectly. And luckily I had Randy Stradley standing behind me to be like, no, actually, he's correct. But he actually said to his sister, he's like, don't listen to him, he's an idiot.
That's like harsh for Star Wars.
I know, yeah, that was really the only experience I've ever had like that. Otherwise, it's always like everybody's smiling, everyone's excited. Just like all of you guys here. See, smiling, excited? Okay. So, obviously, that's a great lead-in to opening it up to questions to you guys. I want to make sure you guys get a chance to ask Brian some questions as well. So I'll start with you right there.
Two quick questions. One,
do we have ninth wave patches yet?
I don't know. Do we have ninth wave patches? It'll happen either through Dark Horse or through me. We're figuring it out.
And the other question is Mara going to be an ongoing or limited series?
It is a 6-issue series.
Because you've written a lot of superpower comics, either like for hire or like demo.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem like you do any superpower ongoings. Is that something that a creator owned? I mean.
Yeah, it's never been a natural fit. I mean, a demo's a great example of how I kind of, like, forced that genre into the kind of stuff I do. And Mara, I would actually say, is actually a lot like demo at its core. Like, that sort of, like, personal drama's there. It's very demo-esque, even though the world is much, much bigger and everything. And the X-Men is, like, I mean, I don't actually, I can actually see myself writing any other, like, Marvel book other than that, just because I sort of, like whatever the X-Men are is basically whatever demo is, you know? That's the superhero I feel like I can write. It's never been, like, a natural thing for me.
Right here.
Brian, I wonder if you could talk a little about your approach to Conan, because I know you're way ahead of where we are, but so far it's been like Conan meets this girl, realizes she's really bad news, and then takes her home to meet the parents.
So she's hot, too. Well, she's bad news, but she's like...
Yeah, which is a little harder. But I look at this and I go, I never liked Conan books before this, so I look at this and go, this is an anti-Conan book. You go, like, Conan would say anything. Was that your intention when you were writing? You just want to make the most subversive Conan book?
No, definitely not. I feel like what... No. Believe me, I did not. This is the Conan that I felt like I could do, and it's what I pitched. And not to like shift any sort of a, like, attention anywhere, but it's what Dark Horse wanted. It's not meant to be like a FU to Conan or anything like that. It's really like I'm writing it very, very genuinely. And it's just how I see it. I mean, it's very much driven by the fact it's, like, based on this love story. I mean, I felt like if I was writing a different kind of thing, it'd be different. You know, it wouldn't have that same tone. But I'm doing my best, man. I know, just joking.
And let's be honest, we've all met a girl who was really bad news and been like, yeah, let's get in a relationship.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's basically exactly what.
Exactly. Next.
As a retailer, actually, the quote that you've done recently that got a lot of attention in your other works was the Supernatural comic.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
I had a lot of rabid Supernatural fans that came in, and then after, I'm like, what else is this guy doing?
All right, great.
So that's what cool. was your experience like working in Supernatural?
I felt like that book fell victim to a lot of stuff that really wasn't its fault. I was writing that right at the time that everything changed at DC. And there was like a lot of fear within like the company itself, like everybody worried about their jobs and what's DC going to be and what's Wildstorm going to be, and so there's a lot of like anxiety around that, and I felt like it really kind of rubbed off on that book. It got like next to no push. It was like just kind of like an awkward time, and I really felt like I wished it had come earlier because I really did like it. I just kind of felt like it was like a little like swept under the rug. That's why I was kind of like pleased to hear that. It's the first time anybody's really asked me about it, actually. So I'm glad. I'm really glad.
Yes, sir. When did you go make your current comics or into comics?
Great.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. Good.
It's the weirdest experience I've had.
By the way, also, women reading Conan is awesome.
Yeah.
Let's trip here.
Graphic design, like kind of agit prop, the graphic design that kind of makes its way into these rebel or political figures in different books. When you're writing that or creating those, are you kind of instantiating of what you would like to see in the political world? Like what if people actually were as great at graphic designers as the people making logos for Ninth Wave and
well, I feel like they're out, I feel like they're out there.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know. I used to be really, really deep into that, into like the street art world, a long time ago in my youth. So I don't follow it that much, but every time I do, like I look at books or online. I mean, that's something that actually really kind of continues to really inspire me, even if I'm not actually working in that medium. I think it's like a really sort of like a forward thinking, really, really rich scene. And I do kind of wish at times I was like still into it, still like a part of it. But no, it belongs to like a different Brian Wood. It's once in a very great while I'll do, and usually only if I can't put it into words right. Like a couple of examples of that. Like I had a very specific plan at the beginning of the Northlanders series, where I would have like really, really dense panels or pages balanced by like really open ones, and I had this whole sort of like concept down of how I wanted to like structure those books, and the artist drawing that like English wasn't a strong language of his at the time, and he was having a hard time kind of getting that. So like I think I like just drew panel shapes for like the first issue, just to like explain kind of what I was talking about. I didn't draw any of the actual story. I just the actual panel lines. But I really don't. I mean, there are things that I really try to get out of the artist's way, and I feel like I do that because I know what it's like to have somebody kind of guiding your hand or trying to, or giving you like too much information. So I just kind of pick my like battles and figure, like, you know, like if there's something I really need to be exactly like it is in my head, then I'll ask for it, but then I'll like back off for like a while, you know, so I don't drive them nuts. Covers sometimes I'm pretty specific about. I think on the covers for Deviate, I had every single one of those in my head before we even began. And I drove Fiona Staples crazy with that because I'm like, can you just change this? I apologize up and down and up and down, and I still do to this day because I felt like it really drove her nuts. But like I said, I really had like really, really clear images in my head. But I mean, one of the biggest compliments I get, and I got it from my artist, Ming Doyle, here at the last panel, is that I write very artist-friendly scripts. It's a natural thing. Like, I'm not trying to do it really in a conscious way, but it comes out that way.
I had another question. Mm-hmm. At the end of the massive, you do these like really awesome, extensive like articles. What kind of research are you doing? Is the internet the most valuable tool, or are you writing like certain novels?
Like it's mostly the web, and I'm actually trying to research as little as possible because I have some weird OCD thing about that. And if I go down that hole, like it's over with. So I tried to I really believe in the power of like a lot of common sense thinking. So I'll research some aspect of something and just kind of like rationally try to like walk myself through. Like extrapolate that mentally in my head in the most plausible way I can. I don't know. It's a really hard thing to like explain. But I mean, that's pretty much where that comes from. Just like a lot of thinking, you know, a lot of like looking up small bits of research and sort of building on that in a way that feels real, even if I'm making it up. Which is why these scripts take so long.
Right, next question. Here? You? Yep. Yeah.
I read the NASA. I didn't know about the Star Wars thing. It's very exciting. What's your favorite film? What are you going to draw from?
It's pretty much all drawn from that first film. I mean, the book is designed in a way where I actually can't draw from anything else, which is fine. I mean, The one Star Wars, the one non-film source that I am using are those, I don't know if anybody's read those X-Wing novels from a while ago. Like, I read those, and I really liked them, like, ages ago. So that's why this series is very heavily X-Wing, because I was really, really into those books. Yeah.
Did you pitch anything for Hero 52?
I was asked to sign an NDA about that. So you can take from that what you will. I don't even know if that's still a binding thing, but really I just don't like to push it, to be honest with you.
Jeremy mentioned before how you write about the history of writing strong female characters. First book that I read was Channels Proud of Jenny One, right there.
Yeah.
You put Jenny One into today's world with a lot of things that happened. Did you see writing her? What is her like now?
Well, yeah, it was 15 years ago. I actually, I'll answer that in a roundabout way. I've had a lot of I've spent a lot of time trying to like set that book up for like TV and film, and it's dated. I mean, I think it's dated in like a cool way, but a lot of like studios or whatever just can't see it now. Like it's like too old. So I worked up this treatment where I like imagined what that book would be if I was inventing it now, if I was creating it right now. I mean, it's really quaint in a way. Like I always like laugh because like how 9/11 changed everything. And in that book, in Channel Zero, the worst thing that the government could do is like basically take away your freedom of speech, which is like almost cute now. You know, it's like now they're like bombing us with like drones and putting us in jail forever. You know, it's like that's why I say it's like a very dated book in that sense. So I did work up this very modern take on it, and it's like set in those like sort of like abandoned neighborhoods outside of Detroit, and it's very very much about sort of like, you know, like class divide more than it is about anything else. So I mean, I'll never make that a book. Like I really feel like it's like I've like passed it by as far as like, you know, actually writing a story. But it was kind of interesting to write that, this like treatment document, just to see, you know, just to see what I could do.
I, for one, would like you to write that book.
I don't think I could do it. I really don't.
You up here in front.
I don't think he, what age would he really have to be? I guess he was, yeah. I'm trying to remember when those novels took place relative to...
Right.
I haven't written him yet. I mean, I didn't have any plans to. I actually have written a new sort of group of pilots under Wedge. They're all new. I am really trying to keep it sort of like... to that time period. I might, though. I don't know.
Wanting those to do a part of your life, like Star Wars, Batman, or The Rings, X-Men, do you find yourself naturally watching films or reading comics where you have these worlds? Do you naturally do the body? Do you find yourself writing in your head like those stories?
It's pretty rare. I mean, it usually has to be something that like interests me at a very high level. I mean, I feel like that's kind of a natural thing that any writer does. Like, we're always like, anytime you hear us talking about things, it's like, oh, it's like this and this put the guy together. It's like a natural kind of way of like framing things. I typically. Like if I'm in like I was saying before, if I'm inspired by something, my like first task is to figure out how to like make it not recognizable. So I should like try to like peel it back and find out what the tiny thing is I like, and then build something new around it, as opposed to just kind of taking a genre or something and like slapping on like a thin coat of new, you know. Wish I had passed on. Wow. Sometimes when I read those Conan boards, I kind of wish I had passed on Conan. No, I'm joking. I don't. Well, I mean, there's the obvious thing, because everybody just wishes they could go back and do everything over again better. I mean, that's like a constant sort of thing that like plagues us. There are aspects of some of my books that I wish I had done differently, like execution details, nothing like sort of major. Like I never wished I'd never done a book, or like I never wished I had like done a book I like passed on. I always try to sort of like if I make a decision, I sort of like program my brain to the point like I like commit to it. And the thought of doing it in a different way or not doing it usually is no longer an option in my brain. I feel like that's the only way I can, like, you know, deal with it mentally. So yeah, there are things like, and if I could go back and do D&Z over again, it'd be the same book, but there'd be things tweaked, you know, different things kind of brought up to like the foreground. I wish I'd gotten a chance to write more of, you know. Just stuff like that.
I really like The Massive. I lived in Hong Kong for a year, so
So seeing it buried 10 stories underwater was pretty awesome. It's totally accurate, by the way. Like, they would just keep going.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't look. My problem is that I have a very hard time describing the book to people who haven't read it in a way that makes it sound interesting, in the sense that, I mean, it's a book about eco-activists. Then they're on a ship and they're looking for another ship.
Right.
How do you describe the book to people?
That's a very...
It
right, it's a really... Yeah, it's a good
it's a hard question. Sell.
It's something that I often, like, still to this day struggle with. I mean, I generally, this is actually a good word of advice, is you should always, first thing, figure out how to explain your book in, like, a single sentence. That's, like, rule number one. I generally say it's a book about environmentalists that fail to save the world. That's usually how I start. And then if I can expand on it, then I like explain that further. But it is tricky because there are several aspects to it. Like there's the crash aspect, there's the environmental aspect, and there's the search for their ship, you know, as well. Those things are all sort of like mingling together, and it is a difficult high concept idea to, like, you know, put into that perfect capsule.
Other questions?
I wanted to ask you, you said that, I'm sorry, I'm going somewhere else.
That guy back there was...
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there any part, I mean, like, sorry, is there any possibility for New York 6?
I don't know. It would be really great because I love that book as much as I love anything else. Like, it's really, really miss it. Unless and until we get the rights back from DC, I would say almost certainly no. Like, it just never sold that well, and DC seems to kind of, you know, being much much tougher about how much leeway they give books that don't sell as well. So, I mean, I would say basically no. I feel like what Ryan and I would just do is just make something new again, you know, kind of like in that same general style, you know. But it is a shame because I would love to just write those books, you know, always. Like 24, 30 issues max. I'm keeping it short. I kind of got like one of the lessons learned from my Vertigo books is to never write anything that long again. I just have a lot of ideas. I have a lot of books I want to write, so I would rather like write two shorter ones than write another, you know, seven year book, which is kind of a grueling thing. Yeah. Everything happens in the middle. Like, you could, I mean, like, Vertigo famously, like, when you pitch it in an ongoing book, they ask you to write literally everything that, like, happens. You have to explain, like there's this story, and I don't really know to what extent it's true, but it's this sort of story that you know, Azzarello had to say everything that happened in all 100 issues. 100 bullets. And the editors are like, don't worry, no one's going to like hold you to it, because everybody knows that things change once you actually begin writing, which is really, really true. I mean, things can like radically change. So in the case of the Massive, like I have a very, very clear ending. Like, I definitely know how everything wraps up. And I knew how I wanted to start. And I had ideas for like stories in the middle, like the second act of the overall. And like, it's almost all changed now, because like once you begin writing, the characters kind of take on a life of their own, and as you write, you get ideas, you know, new ones, you know, that are better or whatever. And so, you know, I always kind of try to, I basically allow myself that freedom to like change the plan, because it's almost impossible to predict like how a book is going to come to life. I thought that was a fire alarm for some.
So we're going to only have time for one last question because we want to make sure everybody gets a chance to get a print on the way out. And we are just about out of time, so.
I picked up the Channel Zero Omnibus, the third course. It's a really great package. Is there any chance that we might see something similar for the couriers?
Yeah. You will see it November 22nd. It's already at the printers and everything. I always that thing's been optioned for film for like 7 years, like for like a really long time, and the artist Rob G is like he's a chef now, like he's not even drawing anymore, but we always said if a movie ever comes out we will cash in and write another book, like if there's actually a film we will do, you know, a fourth one. So but I don't know if he's gonna, you know, if I can hold him to it or not, he's pretty much out of the game.
All right, with that, we are going to wrap here. Again, thank you guys so much for being here.
Sign.
Thanks to Brian for being here. Brian will be signing our booth today at 3 p.m. Make sure you get a print on the way out. And again, thank you so much for supporting all of the books that Brian writes and Dark Horse publishes.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.